Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Hey! I won nothing.
I won everything.
I won half.
There you go.
Thank you. Merry Christmas, listeners. Merry Christmas.
I forgot. We do a podcast, didn't we?
We do a podcast.
Oh, yeah.
It is audio based.
That was the sound of us pulling Christmas crackers, by the way.
All right. So we've each got a little present.
I got a deck of cards.
I got a little...
What did you get?
I don't know. What
it's
is
a hairband.
It's a little hairband.
And I got luggage tags.
Oh, Hell yeah, Christmas.
Corey, could you please explain scientifically how the cracking sound in Christmas crackers works?
A little bit of gunpowder. It goes boom.
Is it really?
Did you know?
I don't know. I think so.
That's amazing.
When I bought these, I got ID'd.
Oh, because of the gunpowder.
Because of the gunpowder.
Because of the gunpowder plot.
They're little miniature fireworks.
Oh, I need to take off my beanie.
Well, I have got the podcast a Christmas present.
I'm trying to get my hat on.
A collective Christmas present. Corey
to put my hair in a bobble.
Oh, you've got the same hat, and then James has got a different colour hat.
Yeah.
Because he's different from us.
I'm special.
You've got like the dunce cap on.
Yeah.
Get a Sharpie and draw a D on it.
Yeah, all right. Let's do it. No, that's not.
No, that's too much.
I haven't got a Sharpie.
Okay.
Image.
Who wants to open the Side Guys Christmas present? Wow, nobody?
I'll do it.
Yeah. Let James do it. I'm going to clear up.
I assumed Corey would say yes.
So Corey, I got scared.
Oh, okay. So did I. So it's okay. We all get scared sometimes.
So Corey, the reason I got this present for the Side Guys is because I saw it in a shop.
What the fuck?
And I was like, I don't know how this works and I want to know. So I'm going to ask Corey and present him with this gift. So how does this work?
Oh.
Have you put me on the spot?
Yes. Please tell me how this works.
James, explain
what it is.
It's a magic growing tree.
Oh dear. Let me have a look.
Yeah.
Okay.
It looks like candy floss.
So it says, "Watch the crystals grow in hours." Oh. Okay. What's it made from? It looks like.
Oh, I did something similar to that in primary school.
I have essentially bought you both a children's gift.
It is just something that makes crystals.
We are children, though,
right?
Yeah, so I guess it's just crystallization.
Yeah, so there's some chemicals that crystallize.
I'm going to get you some water so you can do it right
now. Oh, we're doing it right now.
Yeah,
okay.
Oh, my gosh.
Oh, and over the course of the... hours. It's not going to take us that long.
It crystallizes in hours, and we're recording two episodes today, so
we'll be able to find it at the end, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, here we go.
Really? Advice, toys.
Thank you. Advice for supervising adults. Read and follow these instructions, the safety rules, and the first aid information, and keep them for reference. Oh, wow. Incorrect use of chemicals can cause injury and damage to health. Let's do it.
Cool. Let's incorrectly use these chemicals, guys.
Okay.
We're filming it. We can monetize it. It's fine. Yeah.
This is difficult.
And I'm guessing you now just take the liquid that crystallizes and put it in the little bit at the bottom.
Oh, I've not done the base right. Hold on. There we go.
And so the crystals grow all the way up the tree.
I guess they convect. Is it convect? They move from a state of low density to high density, i.e. they climb the structure of the tree.
So you are thinking of diffusion.
Ah.
But I think this is probably something to do with cohesion and adhesion, which is... Or it could be to do with... It's probably... I don't really know what it's to do with, Luke. There's so many different things. I don't know.
Off the top of my head. Corey, I was about to say, this is why I bought the gift, because Corey couldn't have fun explaining it, and then he gave up explaining it.
It could be so many things. Capillary action, it could be, because it's a very absorbent material. Oh, dear. Which is, it's a salt, I believe. So it's probably a salt and dissolved in...
Oh, this is lovely wine.
In water, which will then crystallize. Let's just rip it open. Oh, dear. I'm pouring.
Wow.
I spilled it on my fingers.
Okay, so basically, for people listening at home... And for people not listening at home, because it's not even in frame on the video.
It's really difficult. I couldn't do it. There we go. I poured it in.
It has been poured into this little base, and you can see slowly the liquid is climbing up the incredibly dry paper that forms the Christmas tree, which means that it's moving from a state where there's a high density of liquid to a low density of liquid, i.e. up the tree. And then... somehow, we don't know how, it will crystallize to form a nice little tree.
So It's probably moving up through capillary action because it's very, you know, there's very, I can't be bothered explaining this, Luke.
Okay.
You've put me on the spot.
What? As in there are very tiny little holes in the Christmas tree?
Because it's kind of absorbent. It will.
Right. Okay.
Something like that. Or it's just like a, it's okay. So it's kind of like when you put a sponge in to water and the sponge will just suck
the
up
whole
the water.
Sponge gets wet. Like those adverts for really good,
kitchen roll. Yeah.
Kitchen roll.
Yeah.
It's basically, I bought you kitchen roll and salt for Christmas. You're welcome, guys.
I don't know if this is safe to get on my hands, but I'll do it anyway. Don't try this at home.
Do it for the pod.
They wouldn't sell it to kids if it was unsafe.
They sell so many unsafe things to kids.
Do they really?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, no. All right, should we start the show? Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas.
We've got a whole show to do.
Yeah, that's not the
that's
end,
it.
Damn. Start the show.
And welcome to The Sci Guys, the show where we talk about the crazy, weird, and wonderful stories from the science world. I'm Corey, and as always, I'm joined by my co-hosts, Jamp and Luke Cutforth.
Hello.
I wish we had Christmassy names.
I did try and think of one, but...
Did you?
For about 5 minutes, and then I got bored.
Well, Jample bells. And
deck the halls with boughs of Corey.
Probably we had deck on the
that's
show.
Good.
Deck would be good. Deck the halls.
Oh, deck, yeah. We know a deck. This week, we're talking about the Newtonian Nativity.
What?
Oh, he was born on Christmas, wasn't he?
He was.
See, it's Christmas themed.
So Merry Christmas to all of our cool listeners and happy holidays to the uptight ones. If you're listening to this on the day it comes out, then it's Christmas time. If you've come looking for a Christmas special, then I will not disappoint you. This week, we're talking about the real Nativity story. This is the life of Sir Isaac Newton.
I love him.
Ooh.
He had a few laws, didn't he?
I think everyone has laws that we live by.
Yeah. But he made some of his
own.
He
made some up.
He did make his own, didn't he? Yeah.
He actually told physics what to do. He made up a few laws that they had to abide by.
Yeah, before that, they were just running amok.
Before
it was anarchy.
They were just doing whatever they wanted.
There is actually a theory, which I really like, which is that gravity didn't exist until Newton discovered it.
Just nobody mentioned that it didn't exist. It was just, you know, it came into being.
The apple was actually the first thing ever to fall to the ground.
And he was like, aha, this thing has happened once. I will make it a law now.
So, as you said, Sir Isaac Newton was born on Christmas Day, the 25th of December. But much like Jesus, he wasn't actually born on the 25th of December.
Really?
No, he was also born on the 4th of January.
Well...
Just like Jesus?
Well, no, Jesus was born in July.
Sorry, you said that like... He was also born on the 4th of January.
What I mean is...
Hinting that maybe Sir Isaac Newton was the reincarnation of Jesus Christ.
There is a reincarnation in this story. So Sir Isaac Newton was also born on the 25th of December, 1642. And also...
Just like Jesus.
Yes. And also... And the 4th of January.
What?
1643.
Because he was born again.
No. Because they changed the calendars. To the Gregorian calendar, which pushed everything by 11 days.
I just thought because he hadn't invented the laws of physics yet, time was just
it was just going about until he was like, no, we're going to stay still.
The day after Christmas was actually just January 4th.
How do you know that the Gregorian calendar was actually instituted? Or maybe Sir Isaac Newton warped the fabric of space-time and the Gregorian calendar was instigated...
As Jesus would.
Yes, exactly. It's instigated in order to make up for the warping of space-time done by Sir Isaac Newton. You don't know that's not true, Corey.
I don't know that's not true.
Checkmate science.
So let's skate on by. look, if you think you know anything... Do you know anything about Sir Isaac Newton?
I know that...
Very little.
Probably had an apple fall on his head but didn't actually, and it's a story.
Yes. He was a lot weirder than you think as well.
Oh, great.
Whatever you think about him, he's really weird.
All right.
He's an odd boy.
So ready for this. Merry Christmas, guys. One of your scientific heroes was a strange person.
That's literally every scientific hero. They're all weirdos and
it's
nerds.
Literally all three of us.
It's honestly, to be honest, my favorite science stories are when scientists are actually very well adjusted and good with people and make lots of friends. Newton isn't one of them.
Are there any of those?
Tesla, kind of, remember?
Oh, okay.
He was a little bit.
Yeah, but he also thought that his brain was a channeling device for consciousness from another dimension. Not that I think that's wrong.
That's what you think, Luke.
Yeah, sure. I think that too.
That guy was great. But also, he was called Luke. So do we trust anything he says?
I just mean that by science's current paradigms, that would be considered weird. So your example of Tesla is not a good example.
As in, he was like, you know, Tesla was socially well adjusted. He could make friends. Newton.
That's a low bar. That's a really silence. Low bar.
It's a low bar that Newton doesn't meet.
No man
okay,
can
let's
have
start
it all.
Off. I've got some fun facts that I just could not find a place for. So let's just start off with these.
Let's just dump them in.
So he was driven by a focus on observation. So rather than just trust texts for information, he stuck a needle in his eye once just to see what would happen.
Good. Yes. What happened?
Did it hurt?
I don't know.
Okay.
I don't know what he was looking for or what he tried to do. He just stuck a needle in there.
He was looking for the needle.
Well, yeah, sort of he was trying to find it, but he was looking at it.
Where's
so,
my eye?
So sharp. Yeah. He just stuck a needle in his eye once. So he believed that God had specifically chosen him to interpret the Bible.
Wow.
And he concluded that the world would end no sooner than 2060. And I've got a nice little quote from
you're
him
just
here.
Describing Luke.
Yeah, he's like, I think Luke, you are a reincarnation of Sir Isaac Newton.
I'll take it.
Is that the reincarnation?
He also like? Died a virgin as well. So,
oh.
Just like me.
So a little quote from Newton. This I mention not to assert when the time of the end shall be, but to put a stop to the rash conjectures of fanciful men who are frequently predicting the time of the end. And by doing so, bring the sacred prophecies into discredit as often as their predictions fail. Basically, he said, it's going to end roughly before 2060, but I'm not going to say exactly when, because everyone else that's saying exactly when are just
wrong.
Shooting themselves in the foot.
Yeah.
And the world might actually end by 2060 because of climate change.
All the rest of
you
it.
Never know. He could have been right.
Now, you know that, just to inject a little bit of fairness into the scientific podcast that we run, the main theory, as far as I've read, behind the end of the world theories, behind these kind of like, this will come and doomsday will come, or this will time will come and we'll ascend, is that, brace yourselves for it, the Earth undergoes a fifth dimensional split. And that people who are ready to go
somehow I knew it was
go
on
to the fifth dimensional split, and we mere mortals stay on the plane of existence, and we go, ha ha, so silly. That they thought the world would end, and actually they've ascended to like a heaven world. That's,
did
I'm
you not say
saying,
this was a scientific theory?
No, I said on our scientific podcast, I'll inject some fairness into
it's a theory.
What these people think.
Okay.
Some of them think. That's kind of what New Age spirituality has done to address the fact that loads of people have predicted the end times and none of them seem to have come.
Wouldn't the Earth be ending like every day then?
Yeah, is it not an easier conclusion?
Possibly,
that they're a bit nuts.
Possibly that people just ascend, but then you could see it as that people like have waves of ascension, i.e. like over time, maybe like people help each other, so you can see that like a sine wave. Like the probability of ascension increases with time, and then when loads of people suddenly ascend, it decreases, and then it will increase again. Anyway, that's what the New Age spirituality might say.
Might.
So, how does that work if people are still around? The people that can, prophesize the end.
I don't know how that works.
Okay, good. That's fine.
I'm just bringing in a different perspective.
I will bring in a different perspective. And then say nothing on it.
Yes.
And that's it.
It's really fun to bring a different perspective that is inherently unprovable. That's a really good, it's really fun way of looking really cool.
It's the worst way to win an argument, isn't it?
Sure.
Prove me wrong.
You can't prove me wrong, and I can't prove me right. So let's start. let's not start. My last fun fact is that he was a member of parliament for a year. In his year as a member of parliament, he spoke up only once. And it was to ask someone to close a window. He was not very good at being a member of parliament.
I mean, he voted, I'm sure. That's the main thing.
Yeah, but they're supposed to speak up, aren't they? That's kind of their job.
Well, not if they don't disagree with anything. They just, I guess. I've made up my mind.
For a full year, Sir Isaac Newton sat there not disagreeing with anything.
Yeah.
No, that's like me on this podcast. I just agree. I just go with the flow.
James has done this for nearly a year, Corey. Are you criticizing James's position in the podcast?
As an MP, you're a terrible MP, James.
That sounds true. That's all good. Luke, can you close the window for me? That sounds good.
So there you go. And actually, the thing is, you say that he would be quite agreeable, but actually, we'll find out he's not the most agreeable man. So let's start at the start with his birth.
Okay, that's how was
place,
he born?
Good place to start.
Like most people, he
in
was
a manger
born
in Jerusalem.
Yeah, that's exactly it.
Just like me.
Well, just like all of us, Luke. So 3 months before he was born, his dad died. So he never met his dad.
That's
what a shame.
Sad.
Galileo Galilei died that year. before he was born.
Reincarnation.
Yeah, so Newton went on to finish Galileo's work.
Reincarnation.
Yeah, as I told you it would come up.
Wow.
And now it has.
Wow.
And it's not going to come up again.
I fully believe it.
Yeah, me too.
I don't need any more evidence.
He was born premature and weak, and they didn't expect him to survive.
Me too.
Really?
Well, I was premature and weak. I'm not sure if they...
I still don't expect you to survive me.
I think I was literally 2 weeks late. I was just...
I was 2 weeks late also.
Yeah.
Yeah, I just did not want to come out.
I'm just overcooked.
So he was born. That was good. Yeah. And then he had a childhood, as most of us do. Well, actually, maybe not most of us. I don't know what the mortality rates are for children. Anyway, within 2 years of his birth, his mum remarried to a man named Barnabas Smith.
Barnabas.
Yeah.
There's not enough people called Barnabas.
I was going to say, what a great name.
I know a Barnabas. He is.
Do you?
You actually?
From Budapest.
Is one of Jacob Rees-Mogg's children called Barnabas?
I don't want to know.
No, I think it's Boniface.
Boniface. That's it.
That's awful.
It's like, as the full name is like Jacob Christopher Boniface Rees-Mogg or something like that. It's like,
oh, it's his middle name.
Yeah, it's one of his middle names.
Oh, okay.
Still not okay.
Yeah.
Anyway, so when he married Isaac's mother, did not include Isaac in the arrangement. So he shipped off Isaac to live with his grandmother.
Okay.
It's weird.
Didn't want to deal with that kid.
In the agreement.
And so Isaac's mother, when Barnabas moved to a neighboring village to raise a son and two daughters, and left Isaac with his grandmother.
This turned out to be Isaac Newton, this kid.
Yeah.
That big mistake, man.
Oh, I thought you were like surprised. Yeah, that's who the story's been about this whole time.
Wow. Stupid mistake.
Yeah, so this apparently...
Like Steve Jobs, where Steve Jobs was like cast aside by his parents and was adopted and had to deal with the problem of trying to deal with that as a kid, of learning that your parents didn't want you. And then to as part of the repercussions of that, he became Steve Jobs. And his parents were like, his like biological parents were like, whoa, whoops.
We could have had a fortune.
Yeah, but also they couldn't have, because had they not given him up, he wouldn't actually probably have become Steve Jobs.
That's
true.
So it's like, whoa.
It would have been Steve something else.
True.
Or maybe not even Steve. It could have been Mark Strong.
Mark Strong.
Anyway, moving on. Yeah, so his mum left him for 9 years until Barnabas died. And apparently Isaac...
And then she came crawling back.
To the 11-year-old. apparently Isaac's pronounced psychotic tendencies were because of that traumatic event.
See, this is the thing. It's like people... We are all told in our society that mental health problems are like problems. As in like they're definitely bad. But... So many of the brilliant artists and brilliant thinkers of the world have had mental health problems. And it's like, that's something to be inspired by, I think, that you have these incredible people and it's just that their brain thinks differently to other people. To spot something different that no one else has thought, you're going to need a brain that thinks differently. And you're also going to be sad about that because you don't fit in.
Mm. I mean, the guy absolutely had anxiety, I'm sure. Like, he secluded himself and also... He
spent his whole life thinking that apples were going to fall
apples
in his head.
Apples are falling.
Yeah,
so apples are falling.
He really, really hated. He really, really hated his stepdad. Up until the age of 19, he would write lists.
Lists of what?
He would write lists of sins that he'd committed.
Earlier I thought it was going to be like, I used to write lists of like who my best friends are.
No.
My mind went to hit list. Stepdad.
So I said that he was 11. He was actually about 19 still when his stepdad
what
was
sins
alive.
Had he committed by the Blimey. Age of 11?
Well, no. So he was 19 by the time he'd finished writing his lists. And one of those, I'll read out.
Technically, you're never done writing that list.
But that's true.
Because you'll stand on a bug every day.
Well, no. If you don't write on the list again, then you're done.
And if you don't sin again.
No, it was not all of his sins, just the sins he'd committed up until the point that he'd written the list.
I see.
Okay. All the ones afterwards don't count.
Look, I'll read out some of his lists for you. using the word God openly. Eating an apple at thy house.
An apple. Oh.
Yeah. Well, that got him back in the end, didn't it?
It did. Yeah, it did.
One fell on him.
Striking many.
What?
Just says striking many.
Okay.
Wishing
that
death.
Sounds like just punching random people in the street. Yeah. I've been striking many.
Wishing death and hoping it to some. 21 and 22 here are a relapse and a relapse.
Oh, yeah, two. That's not good.
Yeah, two relapses. Right, one right after the other. I suppose you could just call that one relapse, couldn't you?
I guess.
A great one that I love is the one about his stepdad and his mother. Threatening my father and mother Smith to burn them and the house over them.
Wow.
Yeah. He did not like him. He threatened to burn the house down.
So that's just sis.
some of his lists that he...
Newton really snapped with this one.
and stealing cherry cobs from Edward Storer.
Bad man.
Oh, oh my God, I'm sorry. One more. Having unclean thoughts, words, and actions and dreams. But because this was before English was standardized, he spelt dreams D-R-E-A-M-E-S-E.
Dremes.
Dremes.
He was Spanish.
Dremes. Dremes.
He felt a little bit bad about himself.
We've all been there.
So after Barnabas died, his mother had a lot of property because two men had died.
Barnabas had a lot of property.
Legend.
Yeah, I know. Good for her. So she thought, you know what I'll do? I'll get my wee son, Isaac, who's 19, to look after my estate. Because he'll be good at that, won't he? He was not good at that. So when he was supposed to be like looking after the cows and stuff, sometimes he'd just curl up and under a tree and read a book.
Yeah.
Ah,
classic.
He was busy inventing physics.
Well, yeah, not yet. He was just reading. Like a nerd.
Oh, okay. He was conceptualizing physics.
When Newton arrived in Cambridge in 1661, the scientific revolution was... right in the swing.
Mm.
The scientific revolution is effectively the switch to the heliocentric ideals. So, which is basically the switch from everything revolving around the Earth to everything revolving around
Galileo.
The sun. Yeah.
Nice.
Who we've mentioned previously.
Who he was the reincarnation of.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Brilliant.
You're damn right. So, yeah, people had started to, you know, conceptualize new meanings of physics, and Newton was right in there when that was happening. He started studying maths. He started off with algebra and geometry. And then he invented calculus.
Nice.
That's quite a jump you just made there, Corey.
Math didn't exist before him.
Yeah, he just decided to make calculus happen. Do you guys know what calculus is?
That was my next question. What's calculus?
Yeah, I didn't take calculus at all.
So, I mean, it's a good way to find slopes of curves and areas under curves. I'm sure you've done calculus before.
I just don't know that it's called calculus.
Yeah. So it's when you're trying to find the slope of something or the area under a curve.
I've done a bit of that.
It's effectively the study of how things change.
Yeah.
It's a way to model the change of things, but with very, very small little changes, which we call infinitesimal changes, which is like working out instantaneous changes in speed, which is how we figured out acceleration by using calculus. It's much easier. The reason that calculus is good is because it's much easier to model those changes.
Mm-hmm.
Like it's much easier to model acceleration and, you know, speed when you're using calculus rather than trying to figure it out over a larger space of time, because you're using basically instantaneous changes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I get it.
I do understand what you mean, but I also don't. But I do.
Instead of thinking, okay, over 5 seconds, something has changed. You're looking at every instant.
On a graph.
Yeah.
So you're looking at a graph.
Yeah. Well, you're not looking at, you're using calculus instead of looking at the graph.
Is it figuring out rate of change as opposed to just change?
Yeah, effectively.
Cool. I get that.
Yeah, exactly. It's pretty straightforward. Calculus sounds like it's difficult, but actually it's pretty easy.
It does. It's always bigged up in like movies and stuff.
It is.
In, like,
it?
American high school movies, it's like, oh, I've got calculus.
I've got pre-calc.
Got pre-calc.
It sounds like some STD.
Makes you sound smarter.
Pre-calc doesn't mean, what is it?
No, I just mean calculus in general.
AP calc. So do you know what happened in Cambridge in 1665? Think about history.
1665. Did Sir Isaac Newton have an apple fall on his head?
No.
Oh.
Well, maybe. The plague came to Cambridge.
Oh, okay.
Didn't know
Too
that.
Too excited for that, Luke. It was the bubonic plague. That's a bad thing. People died.
Did the plague fall on his head?
No.
Did he get the plague?
No, he left Cambridge so that he didn't get the plague.
Wow, privilege. Imagine being able to move just because there's an illness coming.
He was at university. Of course he'd go home. Cambridge was closed because of the plague.
He's a physicist.
Oh, Cambridge was closed because of the plague.
He just built a plague.
I'm fairly sure.
He didn't go home to avoid the plague. He went home because Cambridge was closed.
Because of the plague?
Yes, but he went home because of the plague.
So it wasn't his decision.
I think it probably was his decision as well. Okay. Whether or not Cambridge was closing, if the plague was coming, I'm sure he would leave.
But how do you know it's coming?
Well, he hears things.
You'd hear, you know,
he hears things.
The talk, yeah, of, the talk of the town.
Yeah, exactly. People be like, "Hey, you hear the plays coming? Yeah, I heard the plays coming."
I heard someone down the street just started vomiting. Like,
you heard Mary,
shit.
Right?
She's got the plague.
Yeah. Ah,
yeah.
Lady Gwendolyn down the street. She's dead.
Although it was Cambridge in the 1600s, so there probably wouldn't have been many women there.
Barnabas just down the street
got the plague.
He got the plague.
So he went home and he started thinking just about a lot of stuff.
Cool. I always think about lots of things, regardless of what I'm doing.
Okay. Yeah. So this is where the Apple story came from.
The Apple store?
Oh. The Apple. Yep. Sir Isaac Newton, you know, we're talking about Steve Jobs, but actually it was Sir Isaac Newton that invented
Steve
the first
Jobs
Apple
was
store.
Born in 1665.
You know, the first Apple logo was like an art piece of Sir Isaac Newton under the tree with the apple falling on his head. It's like a beautiful drawing. And it was like the Apple logo used to be this absolutely beautiful drawing.
Oh, I thought you meant the Apple logo. They took the Apple logo from an apple. And I was like, but the Apple logo's got a bite out of it. If it's falling on its head, it shouldn't have a bite.
There you go. So think about the minimalism of the Apple logo, right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And now this is the original logo.
Oh, wait.
That looks like a logo for snake oil.
It's fine.
Well, that's the original Apple logo.
It's terrible. They went from congratulations.
That. Yeah, strange, isn't it?
Thank you.
I do have a purpose.
So, skipping over the Apple, I'm going to go to his reflecting telescope.
Okay.
Just to tease you. Just a little bit of a teaser there.
Right. Ooh.
So, he was working with refraction and whatnot, trying to figure out, you know, stuff about light. And he was also looking at the stars and all of that other lovely stuff. He figured out that white light is actually made up of all the colors of the spectrum. Which,
obviously.
That's true.
Right? It's surprising that no one had figured that out up until then.
Sure.
But he did that. And he was certain that...
So he did the prism as well?
Well, he didn't make... I don't think he made
no,
the prism.
No, Pink Floyd did the prism.
Oh, my mistake. Yeah.
On the dark side of the moon, didn't they?
Yeah.
Yeah. So he did the prism. No, he didn't do the prism. I don't know who did the prism. He was working with the prisms. Okay.
Prism.
And he was certain that light was made of particles and not waves.
Well, he was wrong.
Mm. Everyone was wrong. No one could be right.
Yeah,
until,
that's true. Yeah.
I had a proper argument with someone over this as well. It's this guy called Robert Hooke. They did not get on. Robert Hooke said, "I don't like your methods. I think you're stupid. And also, light is made of waves."
If you'd like to hear more about Robert Hooke and his eventual downfall, you can listen to episode 10 of the podcast where I talked extensively about his thing.
You did?
Yeah.
I started with Robert Hooke. Saying Newton and Robert Hooke were arguing over whether particles and waves.
So you did.
Cool.
Yeah.
Go listen to episode 10 then.
They really were arguing for years to the point that Isaac suffered a mental breakdown. And he withdrew from the public eye in 1678. He returned later on. He was doing gravity. Right about then. So he got, he was very temperamental. His argument with Robert Hooke forced him to just get out of the public light. At which point he started thinking about gravity. So way back when he was avoiding the plague, he apparently watched an apple fall from a tree.
Apparently.
Yeah. No one knows. The story is that it hit him on the head. Nobody really thinks that's true. He said that he saw an apple fall in the garden and he was starting to think about why it fell straight down.
Why did it fall?
Not another way. You know?
What do you mean, why did it fall, James? Have you never been to school?
No, I'm just saying he probably asked. Okay. Why did it fall?
You were inquiring.
No. I'll tell you what he asked.
I know why it fell.
He asked, why did it fall straight down?
Well, I know why it fell.
Yeah. He was more questioning why it fell the way it did rather than the fact that...
that it fell at all. Okay.
People kind of knew what gravity was before.
Right.
It's not like he was like, gravity. That's what makes things go towards the ground.
Have you noticed that when you drop something, it falls?
No one had thought to question that before.
I think we
should look into that.
We live in this age where like everything's so obvious to us because we've been taught it. And it's like, actually, really, nothing's obvious. And some of the stuff you've been taught that you think is obvious is probably not even true.
Effectively, people basically knew about the concept of gravity. What Newton did was figure out how it works, and what the actual principles and laws of it are.
Because it's a big jump to go, physical matter draws other physical matter towards itself. Like, that's a big thing to work out.
It is. Yeah. I mean, I think it's the weakest force that we've got. And he's just like,
And it turns out it's not even true. Physical matter doesn't draw physical matter towards itself. Supposedly, physical matter warps the basis of space-time, and space-time makes other matter fall towards it like it's in a little dip.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is functionally like...
The same thing.
The same thing.
Yeah.
But like
yeah.
if you take a sheet and put a marble on it, it's going to go down a bit yeah. on the sheet.
It's going to draw another marbles.
Yeah. All the other marbles going to go there.
Yeah. yeah. Which is exactly... how gravity works, effectively. Yeah.
As far as we know.
But in 3D
space.
We
don't know anything.
We don't know anything.
Let's just pretend that we do.
Yeah, okay. That's the whole of science. Woo!
So, he started exploring his theories of motion and gravity after he saw that apple fall, supposedly. So in 1684, an English astronomer, Edmund Halley, who you might know.
Have we talked about him previously?
Did we talk about him before in another podcast?
From a little comet. Known as...
Oh, the Halley's Comet.
Halley? Is it Halley?
Halley's Comet.
I thought it was Halley. Oh.
Halley's Comet. That comet that's named after Halley.
Or Halley.
Yeah, it must be Halley.
It's double L.
I was going to say Halley, Halley's but that's
comet.
The wall.
Halley?
Halley?
See, I thought it was Halley, and then I was like, Halley's Comet sounds... It doesn't really matter. No. That comet, okay?
Yeah,
Edmund
comet.
Came by, and he learned that apparently Newton had mathematically worked out elliptical paths of celestial bodies, which effectively means he worked out orbits of planets.
That aren't perfectly spherical.
Yes.
Blimey. Yeah.
An ellipse is like what happens when you get a circle and you squash it just a little bit.
Tiny bit.
Okay, you put a circle in your back pocket and you're sitting on it for a bit and you realize afterwards, you're like, oh no.
Oh no.
My circle. We've all been there.
So many a circle.
That man, the Comet Man, I'm not saying his name again. The Comet Man got Newton to organize his notes, and then he published Philosophy Naturalis Principia Mathematica, which is the mathematical principles of natural philosophy, which established the three laws of motion and the law of universal gravity. Do you know what Newton's laws of motion are? Take one each.
The three ones. Is that three?
There's three. Yeah.
Okay. Every action has an equal and opposite reaction.
That's number three.
Number one is a thing will not move unless acted on by a force or something or other.
Yeah, pretty much.
But with different words.
Yeah, so every object in a state of uniform motion will remain in that state of motion unless an external force acts on it.
So that's...
that's exactly what I said called? With the word.
That is...
In fact, it's the reason that if you were to fire a bullet in space, it would just keep going. Say anything again.
Yeah, what's that called again? As a process?
Inertia.
Oh, inertia, yes. Yeah.
So and what's the second law?
So the second law is force equals mass times acceleration.
Ah, okay.
Yeah, that's the easy one. That's a little equation. But yeah, so the first law basically means that if something's standing still, you need to push it to make it move. And if something is moving at a constant speed, you need to push it to change its speed.
To make it stop.
That doesn't really happen on Earth because we've got air in the way, which is constantly pushing on stuff.
Yeah.
But if you're out in space and you threw a ball,
it's just going to keep going forever,
it's
wouldn't
it? It's not going to stop
like,
going.
Unless just like Neil Armstrong's poo.
Oh, yeah.
It's just going on forever and ever.
It's still flying at the same speed that it was ejected at.
That must be weird, man.
Unless it's hit like a meteorite or a comet.
That'd be very unlikely.
The chances of that are minuscule. Yeah. And actually, I think...
Could happen, though.
So if you were to fire a bullet in space, apparently... Because of the rate of the expansion of the universe, it's never going to see anything else again.
Wow. Ooh.
Supposedly. I can't, totally confirm that. But, yeah.
Wow.
Don't fire a bullet in space.
Gotta have
or do, because
aim.
No one's going to get hurt.
If you're going to fire a bullet in space, that's right. If you're going to fire a bullet,
do it in space.
That's the safest place to have. Do you know what? Everyone's allowed to have guns so long as they're in space.
Guns in space.
Yeah, that won't age well.
Oh no! Imagine.
Haven't you seen Star Wars?
You're gonna get like if you imagine you become like prime minister in like 50 years when we have like a space fleet, and then they're like, Corey said once that if you're gonna have guns, do it in space.
50 years when I'm 72.
Yeah, there are some old prime ministers and presidents.
I've got better stuff to be doing when I'm 72. Like dying.
Like this podcast.
Both fundamentally the same thing to me. So those are Newton's three laws of motion. Nothing will move unless you move it. Force equals mass times acceleration. And for every action, there's an equal and opposite reaction. Which I should explain quickly. Which basically means if you push on something, it's pushing back on you. So I'm pushing
How
on this chair.
Rude.
With the same force that the chair is pushing on me.
And that's why you're not falling to the floor or flying up into the space.
Yes.
Yeah.
Exactly. Perfect. So, The universal law of gravitation that Newton came up with states that two objects attract each other with a force of gravitational attraction that's proportional to their masses and inversely proportional to the square of the distance between their centers.
Is that GMM?
Okay. That makes complete sense.
Something R squared.
Yes.
Yes.
Sure. I can't speak that in my head. Sure. Basically, the bigger something is, the more attracted stuff is to it.
Good.
The farther away something is, the less attracted something is to it.
That's true. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
So if you've got something really big and really close, you can be pulled.
If there's a really hot person, the further they go away, the less attractive they become.
Well, yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
That's a good example.
There you go.
Yeah, sure. Okay. Fine. I'm okay with that. and all of this allowed him to calculate the mass of the planets and their orbits and the flattening of the Earth at the poles. He just calculated a lot of stuff based on that stuff that he figured out. He's a very smart cookie. And bearing in mind, none of this is with, you know, measuring the Earth from space or anything. This is just him using some maths.
Yeah, it's kind of mad that he came up with this stuff where he was ignoring air resistance, even though nobody had ever been in a situation where there was no air resistance.
Did they know there was no air in space?
I don't know. That's why it's so weird. Or maybe he just came up with the equation and it was mildly inaccurate because of the air resistance, but he didn't really care because it was close enough.
Maybe they didn't. They weren't able to measure it closely enough, so it didn't even seem inaccurate.
Yeah, yeah.
Or maybe he just used maths, which
maybe
makes sense.
Derived it from.
Oh, because he was doing planets, wasn't he?
Oh yeah, so yeah. He was observing planets.
Yeah, he was doing planets.
Okay. Oh. Well, we're silly. Well done, Newton. You're cleverer than us.
Yeah, there's no air resistance in space.
Although there is like the, although you have like the gravitational equations by Newton and more accurate equations nowadays. Mm-hmm. You still can't actually predict where a planet's going to be across time because of the, like, I don't know why it is, but even though we think we understand gravity very specifically, if you run the simulation for long enough, it always deviates from what the planet actually does.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you can calculate it across enough time in that...
You can, like, send a mission to Mars and you'll land on Mars. But, like, if you try and calculate it across, like, significant amount of time, our equations still don't do that accurately enough. Or it's just being pulled by other planets. And there's, like, this really interesting thing where, like, if you... this might be something to do an episode on one day. There was a guy who did a bunch of the equations for gravity and he put them into his computer, but the computer only printed out 3 decimal places. And when he then refed them back into the computer, only to 3 decimal places, because that's what the computer had printed out, it then...
was wrong.
Was wrong very drastically, even though the input was only wrong by thousandths of a place.
Yeah.
It then across time was like so deviated from the actual data that it was just like, yeah. So that it'll be that like any other planet, any other, even like an asteroid, like tiny amounts of gravity pulling on things makes over across time it just deviates from so drastically, so you can never truly simulate gravity.
You've got to think, because everything is moving as well, because everything is basically orbiting something.
Yeah,
like all these planets, or look, so you've got moons that are orbiting the planets.
Yeah,
you've got planets that orbit the sun, you've got the stars that then orbit, you know, in galaxies. Yeah. They orbit, say, a central point of mass, probably like could be a black hole or like a mass at the center of a gravity of a galaxy. Then the galaxies themselves are also orbiting a center. Yeah. It's amazing.
Because if you take, for example, like imagine you jump, right? You just jump now and you put a force on the Earth of like a tiny, tiny degree,
then
right?
You're pushing the Earth slightly that
way. Yeah. So imagine you jump by a tiny, tiny degree and then you measure the amount of difference that made across 100 million years, right? That is the same difference it would make if you jumped 100 million times stronger with a deviation in time by 1 year. So if you imagine that you're doing things every day, like walking and jumping and stomping on stuff, across giant spans of time, that's going to have an effect on the way the universe plays out.
What's really interesting as well is that we ourselves, sending stuff off into space, we're making the Earth less massive in a tiny, tiny sense.
Sure.
More than most planets just naturally would lose
and
mass.
Burning things and turning them into heat.
Oh my god, which is then escaping.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
No, because also because of the, you know, we're destroying the ozone layer and probably
some of that escapes
into stuff off in space. That's mental.
Yeah.
Wow.
We gotta sort our shit out, man.
We're just like messing up the universe.
Yeah, it's losing weight.
Now, I was saying this earlier on. I was thinking, what if, you know, all of life is just a simulation, right? And the people that made the simulation, or the beings that made the simulation, decided that, okay, we're just going to make, you know, the Earth as a thing. I'll put all the stars and stuff in there. You can look at them. You can't touch them, obviously. No one's ever going to go there. So we'll just make them visible. And then people started looking really close. And they're like, okay, well, we'll have to render these higher.
It's called procedural rendering.
But then people start deciding to go off into space. And they're like, oh, right, okay,
we're
right.
Gonna go there now.
Okay, let's make the moon. We've made the moon. Fine. They're not getting any farther than that. We know that. Then people make robots and send them off to Mars. Like, okay, Christ, we've made Mars. Fine, that's it. And now we're sending robots outside of the solar system.
Oh, yeah, there's one that's
simulation
left the solar
is just
system.
Increasing in.
And eventually we crash the computer.
Exactly, that's what's going to happen. We're just going to crash the computer because they didn't expect, like, they just wanted to simulate, say, how intelligent life develops. And suddenly they're having to render planets upon planets upon planets because they didn't expect humans to
and
want
there
to
are
get
more
off
people,
the Earth.
So they're having to render more viewpoints as well.
Exactly.
Haha, we'll get out of the simulation by breeding and traveling.
Our curiosity will surely kill us.
There's a Rick and Morty episode about that, isn't there?
Is there?
Where they're in the simulation, and so they just get loads of people.
No, to do lots of different things.
In the simulation.
Yes. They're like, if your name starts with a J, jump with the
left
angle
behind,
of the sun 200 years from now.
It's brilliant. Yeah, Rick and Morty's actually doing some good, interesting concepts.
They are.
You've got to be really intelligent to...
You have to have a particularly high IQ to understand the humor completely.
Shall we get back to Isaac Newton?
Sure.
We actually should, yeah.
Okay, so Robert Hooke, upon the publication of the first edition of Principia, Robert Hooke immediately accused Sir Isaac Newton of plagiarism. Again,
bloody hell.
They just did not get on at all. But, you know...
Is this where Hooke's equations of motion? Is that a thing? Hooke's equations of motion?
Basically, no. Hooke kind of had the idea that there were elliptical orbits.
Right.
And he said that that was all his idea.
Yeah.
But everyone was like, well, you didn't write it down though, did you? So, you know, Newton got away with it, even if he did steal it. So Newton withdrew all references to Hooke in his notes and threatened to withdraw from publishing the subsequent edition of Principia altogether because he was a drama queen.
Wow.
God,
we think these people work with like the best interests of humanity at heart, and they absolutely don't.
No, they're all selfish pricks. So the Comet Man, who he'd put a lot of himself into Newton's work, and he tried to, like, you know, smooth things over between the two of them, and then Newton ended up agreeing to acknowledge the Comet Man and Hooke when he was talking about inverse squares, but it did nothing to calm down Hooke. So basically, Comet Man comes in and says, guys, you need to chill out, and Newton's like, okay, fine, I guess I'll mention him, and Hooke's like, no, I still hate him. So the years go on,
so
and this is really awful. Hooke's life began to unravel. His niece and companion, I think he was banging his niece.
Okay.
What?
Yep. She died.
Who was?
Hooke.
Okay.
Yeah. In 1687. And Newton just got more and more famous, and Hooke got less and less famous.
Good.
And he got more bitter and loathsome towards Newton just because Newton was doing better than him.
Did Hooke do anything impressive?
I mean, you spoke about him, didn't you?
Hooke's equations of motion. Is that a thing? I think that's a thing.
Did he not start off with the...
Not as popular as
Isaac's thing.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, I did a whole episode on him.
Yeah, that's what I was saying. You did a whole episode. Oh. Go back to episode 10 to find out what Robert Hooke did.
No, yeah, he was really good, actually. I really liked his stuff.
Yeah, so as I said, his life was unraveling. He was still the president of the Royal Society. Now, Sir Isaac Newton wanted to be the president of the Royal Society. And because Hooke really did not like him. So instead of, you know, resigning like a normal person would, he waited until he died.
So I will never live to see Isaac Newton in office.
So he retired in the year of his death in 1703.
Did he know he was going to die?
He probably was just too old to really get on with it.
It's coming in a few days.
But it was a proper scientific rivalry. These guys hated each other. But I guess Isaac kind of won.
Well,
in the end.
For now.
He lived longer.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, the wave particle duality stuff is very, very interesting. And will be increasingly interesting as we move towards a quantum computing world.
That's true. I think that Newton did a fair amount, you know, with gravity and motion and stuff, and he could probably be quite wrong. In fact, he was wrong on some things. Einstein came in later on and said, yeah, it's not, it's relative, you know, instead of being
absolute.
Absolute.
Yeah.
He wasn't really a team player, as you've probably guessed from this entire report.
Sure.
Being the head of the Royal Society is probably not the best job for him. Apparently, he would really just defend his own discoveries, and he would just go from conflict to conflict. But because he was so powerful in the Royal Society, he would just squash anyone that bothered him. So
it's so interesting, because it's always so, like, you want to believe that people in science to do discoveries. And then and there are some. There's loads of people who are in science to kind of get personal advancement and have jobs and stuff. And then there's some brilliant people who actually make brilliant discoveries. And then some of the famous ones, you're like, they must be. No, no.
Well, I think Newton was just a bit of a nut, to be honest. Yeah.
He wasn't
very social. He was pretty anxious, and he had mental breakdown after mental breakdown. A bit of a mess.
Did a couple good things.
Yeah, so he was described as tyrannical and autocratic. In 1705... there was a controversy that had been kind of brewing for a while. A German mathematician called Gottfried Leibniz publicly accused Newton of plagiarizing his research. But luckily, since Newton was the head of the Royal Society, he got to appoint the people that did the investigation. So, unsurprisingly,
just like our government.
Yeah, exactly. So they did a big old investigation into Newton. They were like, did he plagiarize this? But given that he appointed them, no, Newton surprisingly did not plagiarize it. Whoop-de-doo, who'd have thunk it? Yeah, that's kind of the life of Newton. But as lives end. His life ended, the way that most do, with his death.
Yeah.
How did he die?
How did he die? When did he die?
How? I don't care when.
Okay, cool.
He did it.
He died at some point before now. Before Luke was born, so it doesn't matter.
It didn't happen.
Actually, I've made everything on this podcast up because nothing before Luke ever existed.
This is so fascinating.
This is just like a big story time, isn't
it? It's just story time to send Luke to sleep.
Yeah.
Well, go home, sleep now.
Got another episode to record. I can't go to sleep.
So by the time he was about 80, he started experiencing digestion problems, because of course he did. And he changed his diet and everything. In March of 1727, he was 84. And he had a severe pain in his abdomen, and then he blacked out, and he just didn't wake up.
Aww.
And that's how he died. It doesn't say how he died. He just had a stomach pain, and then...
That's generally most deaths, though.
Was gone. Yeah.
Dead.
Yeah, dead. And that's the end of Sir Isaac Newton.
Wait.
Yay.
Oh, wait. Are we cheering that?
Well, I mean, he was a bit of a dickhead, wasn't he?
Hey! Merry Christmas!
Merry Christmas to Merry Jesus Christmas. Too. Sir Isaac Newton. He didn't come back, though. Thank you for listening. You can find the full references for this episode in the description. Subscribe for new episodes every Monday. And why not leave us a nice wee review? You can find and contact us at SciGuysPod on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube. Or you can become a patron at patreon.com/SciGuys. Why not send us an email at SciGuysPod@gmail.com? I'm not Corey everywhere.
I'm Jampkin everywhere.
I'm Luke Cupworth everywhere.
Merry Christmas!
Merry Christmas!
Or happy holidays.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits, with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Sally from finance loves fly fishing. She used to spend her weekend surrounded by receipts. Then she switched her company to Ramp. Now, spend is all under control, all in one place. Her team submits their expenses with a text, and she can close the books without all the busy work. So Sally's weekends are all her own, surrounded by fish, not receipts. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.